All right. Just a little disclaimer beforehand. I generally don't keep very close track of exactly what I spoke about and what I did not speak about. Some of these topics we may have covered in varying levels of depth and detail in the text, but forgive me if you can't have a buffer of host here and not discuss the topics of milchig bread and the topic of how long to wait between milchig and flatus, which if you look at the Maror Mekomos packet, you'll see some unusual type of packet. You have page one is Lechem Chalavi, which is the issue of milchig bread, and then it says page two, and there's a whole other outline on the amount of time to wait between milchig and flatus. We should be able to get through both topics fairly easily in the course of this year, and then hopefully, you know, there are a couple of other topics to discuss as well, in terms of when you're eating milchig and flatus on the same table, some basic guidelines, which we probably will not get to. But it's certainly not going to, that alone doesn't warrant a separate shiur. So probably next week already we'll be starting Choshen Mishpat Inyanim issues relating to Dinei Mamonos. And I'll just pick and choose topics. If anyone has recommendations of topics that you'd like me to cover, certainly I'm open to that. It's all brand new to me, and I'm very happy to be able to learn those Inyanim. All right, so let's start at the beginning. In terms of, we'll start with the milchig bread, because I find that to be a very interesting topic, and then it happens to be that I stuck it on the top of the Maror Mekomos for some reason, so that's what we'll start with. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim that Ein Lashon Es Ha'isa B'Chalav, a person is not allowed to knead a dough with milk. Ve'im Lashon, if a person kneads a dough with milk, Kol HaPas Asura, the bread that you make with milk is going to be asur. You're not allowed to have such bread. Mitzvei hergal avera. The Gemara says that that's going to lead to avera, meaning bread is something you normally you like to be able to make a pastrami sandwich with your bread, and something that's very often you do eat meat together with the bread. So if you make a milchig bread, it's asking for trouble, and therefore it's asur to make a milchig bread. The Gemara in Zvachim adds, not only is it asur to make a milchig bread, it's asur to make a fleishig bread as well. If you have chelev on the size of your oven, you have some sort of, not chelev, but a mutter fat, shuman, on the sides of the oven, you're not allowed to stick the bread onto the oven because you don't want the bread to become fleishig bread either. It's just like you like that pastrami on your bread, you like to spread cream cheese on your bread as well. So you're not allowed to have any milchig or fleishig bread. So that's very clear in the Gemara. However, the Gemara of Pesachim tells us something somewhat of a kula, and it's unclear exactly what the kula is. The Gemara asks, is it really true that it's usur to make milchig bread? And quotes a source, it seems that it's mutter to make milchig bread, because Rabbi Yeshua said to his sons that to at a certain point, lo shali b'chalva, to knead bread for him with chalav. So at the end of that Gemara, the Gemara says, k'dam ravina ke'en tura shayni. And if the bread is ke'en tura, then it's going to be mutter. So what we have to figure out, obviously, is what in the world does that mean, ke'en tura? Because there's our heter right there for when you can make milchig bread, how you can make milchig bread, is if it's ke'en tura. So what exactly does that mean? So Rashi says ke'en tura, source number three, says ma'at, ke'ayin shel shor. Ke'en tura doesn't mean like a shor, it means ke'ayin tura, it means like the eye of a shor, which means a very small, beady-eyed shor, right? An ox is a big animal, but its eyes are not particularly large. So a piece of bread that's small, like the eyeball of an ox. So then it's mutter lalosh b'chalav. Then it's mutter to knead such a dough with milk, because it's going to be a tiny little dough. Why does that help? So Rashi explains, the akhle miyad v'asachas, you're going to eat that so quickly in one sitting anyway, there's no way you're going to forget v'lo mashile delimshi shenilosh b'chalav. You're not going to leave it around your house long enough to forget that this is a milchig bread. You're making the bread. You're making it with milk. So mainly, you'll remember it's only one piece of bread. You're going to sit down and eat it fresh out of the oven. It's going to be gone by the time you would have had time to forget that it was milchig bread. So mainly, it's going to be mutter. That's Rashi's hetek, and to what it means, it has to do with the size of the bread. Now, Rashi doesn't exactly quantify the size. And the ke'en tura presumably is an expression. The size of an ox's eye is not a very large size. Presumably it could be a little bit bigger than that. Right? And Rashi doesn't exactly quantify how small is small. So the Mechaber writes in Shulchan Aruch, which happens to be in source number 5, on the second line over there, he says, in Hayyadavar Mu'at, k'dei achila b'bach achas. The amount you would have in one sitting. So if it's the amount you would have in one sitting, that's called small enough. The Ramah disagrees, and the Ramah says no. Not just the amount you would have in one sitting, but he says the amount you would have for one day. I mean, one day's worth of eating is also considered ke'en pura. That's also it's also considered to be small enough. The Aruch HaShulchan had an additional kula. I didn't get to put everything in the Maamar Chumash, but the Aruch HaShulchan had, not only is ke'en pura, is it okay to have a bread the size that you could finish in one day, but it's the amount of bread that your family could finish in one day. So if it's a larger family, you can make larger dough. If it's a smaller family, you have to make smaller amounts of dough. But the Aruch HaShulchan argues that there is no defined size as ke'en pura. That's why the Gemara uses an expression rather than giving an exact size, because the exact size really depends on who's making it and how long we anticipate the bread to be sticking around. So that it happens to be, even if my family may not plan on eating bread, you know, today, we may not be planning on washing on this bread and having it today, but still, that's the gezeira. The gezeira against milchik bread was only if it's going to be enough, so much bread that my family couldn't eat it in one day. I don't think everyone holds that it has to be Aruch HaShulchan. That's a big clue to say that it depends on the size of the family. If the whole family would eat it if they were eating bread in the same day, that allows for a pretty large size. We're going to see later on in this year, Belsky, in a letter that he wrote recently, clearly holds the Dover Pashut against the Aruch HaShulchan. He doesn't quote the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't think he would change his mind, though, if he did see the Aruch HaShulchan. He probably has seen it, you know, in the past. I would imagine the Aruch HaShulchan sounds like a big chiddush. It doesn't seem that that's what's the generally accepted opinion. But be that as it may, this is one mahalik in what Ken Tula means. The Ken Tula has to do with size. The other mahalik in what Ken Tula means is the mahalik of the Rambam. The Rambam says, no, there's nothing to do with the size of the bread. If you look in the source number 4, the Rambam writes, Ein Lashin Ha'isa, well, that's a typo in the Bar-Ilan CD, not Lashon, Lashin, right? Ein Lashin Ha'isa B'chalav, you don't need dough with milk, V'im Lashin, if you did, Kala Pasa Sudam Me'hergal Avera, it's an exact quote from the Gemara, why Shema Yochab Abasa, we're afraid you're going to eat meat with it, again, the same idea, you can't make plashik bread unless you eat milk with it. Now here's what the Rambam translates Kantura, he says, V'im shina b'tsura satas, but if you change the shape of the bread, ad shetia nikeres, k'desh lo yochol v'lo basa v'lo chalas, to make it clearly recognizable to people that this bread is different. This isn't the standard bread that people have. So then people are going to start asking questions, what's with the funny bread? And people, and they'll be told, no, this is funny because it's a milchik bread, it's a fleshik bread, you have to be careful. And then they'll find out about it, they'll investigate. You see a funny looking food, in general people are very hesitant to try new things, so they inquire a little bit about it first. So you see bread that's shaped in this completely unusual shape, it's very likely that a person is going to inquire before he eats it. And if he's told, so if he inquires, he'll be told that it's either flesh or milchik bread. So again, two approaches to what the heter is when it's mutter to make milchik bread. Rashi says it's mutter to make milchik or flesh bread if you're making it in very small quantities, the amount that you would eat, according to the way the Ramah says it, the way a man you would eat in one day. But the Rambam says, no, nothing to do with quantity. It's mutter to make milchik bread if you make it in a very unusual fashion, if you shape it in a very unusual way. Once it's shaped in a very unusual way, then it's mutter to have the milchik bread because people will realize that this bread is unusual and that they'll investigate and they'll find out that it's milchik refreshing before partaking of the bread. Now, just like we ask within Rashi, when it comes to small, we ask how small is small. So when the Rambam says that it has nothing to do with size, but it has to do with different, we have to ask how different is different, right? How unusual does the bread have to look like lechem apanim? What exactly does it have to look like to constitute different? So this too is machlokes tapostim. Chacham HaSadim writes that it has to be different enough that if people were to visit from other towns, from other cities, they should notice right away that this bread is strange, that this bread is unusual. And you've got a complete stranger walking through the house, he would say, what's that? Why is that so? What kind of cake is that? What kind of bread? He would immediately ask about it. But the Chafetz Chaim says, no, it doesn't have to be that unusual. It just has to be different than the other bread in your house. If all the bread in your house is in loaves, and you make this in a roll, you've seen many different shapes of rolls, and you don't, just because you see Italian bread, it doesn't mean you ask, hey, what's that? That's so unusual. It looks like a loaf of bread, so it's a little bit of a different shape than we're used to, maybe. But it's not so crazy. So the Chacham HaSadr would say, well, that's not crazy enough then. Whereas the Chavos Da'at says, no, that's good enough. As long as it's different than everything else I have, it's good enough. It's considered to be unusual enough. It doesn't have to be so unusual that someone would have to ask about it. Good, so those are the two shittos in terms of how unusual it has to be. Also very much Nogei Halacha L'maisa, as we'll find out soon. In terms of Pesach Halacha, so when is it mutter? Does it have to do with size? Or does it have to do with how different the bread looks? So it happens to be the Shulchan Aruch paskens like both. That is, the Shulchan Aruch says it's also to make milchik bread, but if you either make it in a very small quantity, or you make it in a way that it's shaped in a very unusual shape, either one of those is a good enough heter, and you're allowed to make milchik bread or fleshik bread if you have either one of those things working for you. Now there are a couple of issues, major machlokes, yeah, we'll discuss that as well too. Yeah. There are a couple of issues that there's machlokes about, and on the surface they seem like two or three different machlokesim, but as Soloveitchik points out, they really all seems to be conceptually the same machlokes. Let's go through machlokes by machlokes, two of them, and then we'll see how they conceptually, the two machlokesim can be fused together. So one issue that the post can deal with is, we know that in general, we've discussed obviously at length, in the kosher shiurim there's a concept of bittul, right? That if you have something non-kosher, a tiny drop of non-kosher food goes into your big pot of kosher food, so if it was just a tiny drop, it's bottled with shishim, and everything's mutter, the food is kosher. Right? But we also know that there's a concept of ein levatel in issa l'chasila, that even though it may be true that when the tiny drop of non-kosher food falls into that big pot, the whole pot is still kosher, I'm not allowed to take that tiny drop and put it into the kosher pot of food on purpose. Right? That's ein levatel in issa l'chasila. You're not allowed to put the non-kosher ingredient in there on purpose, l'chasila, even though to the other, if you did it, everything would still be kosher in the end. Right? That's generally the halacha. What about milk and bread? Let's say that I know that I'm just going to put a little bit of milk into this dough. The dough is huge. It's for sure going to be more than 60 times the amount of milk that I'm putting into it. So do we say, well, ein mevatel nisa l'chatchila, I'm not allowed to do that? Or do we say, maybe over here it's different. Maybe over here I'm allowed to put the milk in the dough. So this is my closest opposed. And the Dovi Masha says, I don't see why it's any different than putting a little drop of milk into chicken soup. If it's iser, right, when you put milk into chicken soup, if you were to put enough of it, it would make it iser. So putting even minute quantities is iser to do with chatchila. You're not allowed to do it. So too by bread. If you were to put enough of it, it would make the whole bread iser because it would become a milchik bread. You do it in minute quantities. You put small amounts of milk into the dough. I don't care how many times it's bottled. It's iser to do that with chatchila. True, the bread would still be kosher, but you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to with chatchila place small amounts of milk, traces of milk, into a bread. Right? It's saying mevatel nisr l'chatchila, you're being mevatel nisr. Just like your mevatel milk in chicken soup is being mevatel nisr, being mevatel the milk in a dough is similarly being mevatel nisr. Nachla Tzvi, however, which is one of the commentaries on the Sardis Shulchanos, disagrees with this. He says that it's not true, that there's a fundamental distinction to be made between the case of putting milk in chicken soup on the one hand and putting milk in dough on the other hand. And that is as follows. He says that when you put the milk in the chicken soup, so if you were to put enough milk into that chicken soup, for sure the chicken soup would become trace. It would for sure become not kosher. However, if you put a lot of milk into the dough, let's say you were to pour a gallon of milk into the dough in a way that it would never become batel, the dough is not necessarily going to be asr. Why not? Because we learned that there are two heterim to dough, to milchik dough. Either if you make it in small quantities, which granted you may not have over here because you're making this big dough with a lot of milk, but the other heter is if you shape it in a very unusual fashion. Now when I'm kneading it together with the milk, I have yet to shape it. So it could still become mutter. It hasn't created issa yet. You can't call it in the vatlanis or the kafila when it's not at the stage yet where it has a shame issa. It doesn't get the shame issa until you actually form it into a normal loaf of bread, right? That's when it gets the shame issur. Up until then, it still has the potential to be formed in an unusual way, and if you do that, you can save it still. So it's not yet issur. That's the argument of the Nachlasi. Now, how would the Billy Masha respond to that? He would say, no, it's not that it doesn't have the shame issur yet. Milchik dough are issur. There's a way to save it, But it's out there, meaning it's not that the Melchizedek dough is in limbo right now, and we're going to decide whether we're going to shape it normally or abnormally, and we'll either make it Muslim or make it Aser. It's not in limbo. Right now it's Aser. There's a heter, I can be master it. How can I be master it? By shaping it in an unusual fashion. Right? That's probably how the Gilui Marsha would say. But right now it's still considered a shame Esther, and therefore the Gilui Marsha would say, I'm not allowed to be Mevato. So good, this is the Machlokas Achronim. Can I stick trace amounts of milk? Can I put small amounts of milk into a dough? Is that mutter or is that aser? That's one machlokas. And it happens to be just in terms of halakha, Rav Shechter quoted Achronim once. He didn't say who the Achronim were, but he said that there are Achronim that say that it depends what you plan on doing with the bread. That if you plan on eating that bread with a milchig meal, or with a parv meal, then it's okay, then you're allowed to stick trace amounts of milk into it, but if you plan on eating it together with a fleishig meal, so then you're not allowed to be mevatelit, because you then, essentially, you're being mevatelit to cause yourself the bringing of the milk and the flesh together. That's much closer to putting the milk into the chicken soup. I mean, normally when you put the milk into the bread, that's a step removed from putting milk into chicken soup, because the whole concern with making milk and bread was that you may have that bread together with flesh. But over here, you're doing it in such a way that if you never plan on having it come to flesh anyway, and it's going to be batal anyway, so you said that there are chachamim that say that it's mutter if you don't plan on eating it together with the flesh and milk. I was unable to find any chachamim who say that, but Rav Shechter knows a lot more chachamim than I do. I assume that he saw it somewhere. So that's the compromise approach. But leaving that shita out, fundamental machlokas. Do we apply ein mevat mitzvah l'chatchila to putting milk into dough, or do we not say the concept of ein mevat mitzvah l'chatchila, and we say that it's in fact mutter to put trace amounts of milk into dough? Another machlokas. Another machlokas is if one makes a dough, and then you make a large loaf of bread, let's say, and it's certainly an iser, because you made a large loaf of milk as bread, but then you decide, you know what I'm going to do with a large loaf of bread, I'll cut it up into smaller pieces, I'll package them separately, each piece separately, so it's going to be a whole bunch of small pieces of dough. Or I'll cut out the bread in a funny shape, you know, like sometimes a caterer or something will do, to cut it into a fancy shape that will be a very unusual shape, and then I'll serve it. Can you be matir it after it's already become aser? Can you take a dough that's already a milchig loaf of bread and turn it into a mutter milchig loaf of bread, either by changing the size to very small sizes or by changing the shape to a very unusual shape? So is it changeable once you've already had the shame iser bichal on the bread? So the Chavetz Chaim writes that once bread has already been baked in an usher way, it's been shaped like a regular bread and baked already, reshaping the bread or cutting the bread down doesn't make the bread mutter, it remains usher forever. That's the sheet of the Chavetz Chaim. However, the Chachma Sadam disagrees. Chachma Sadam says, no, and the Al-Khashulchan also. The Chachma Sadam and Al-Khashulchan say, look, he made this huge loaf of bread. He made a Chassan Kala, you know, Kala. And you realize, oh, there, I know the milk is Chassan Kala Kala. When we throw the whole thing out now, it's all non-kosher. So Chachma Sadam and Al-Khashulchan say, Shachat Chak like that. You don't want it to Chaval. You want to throw away the whole big thing. So they say you can cut it down into smaller pieces or shape it into a very unusual way, and then it can become mutter still. You can still be matter it. Now, Belsky has an interesting ha'ara. Belsky, in a letter that he wrote a few years ago, wrote that he thought that even the Chavetz Chaim would be makel in most cases bizmanenu. What does he mean? What does the Chavetz Chaim say? That if I make a loaf of bread, a milchig loaf of bread, that's usher, and it's going to remain usher no matter what I do to it afterwards. If I was going to make it in small loaves, I had to do it before I baked it. If I was going to make it in unusual shape, it had to be done before I baked it. Once I baked it as a regular loaf, there's nothing I could do to change it and to make it mutter. So Zelsky said, yeah, that's if I make the bread. What if a guy makes the bread? So he said, there's no gezeira of milchig bread calls man that it's biyad b'guy. Where does the iser of milchig bread, where does the gezeira of milchig bread kick in? Only when I acquire it, when it becomes mine. So, if the guy made this huge thing of bread, and then he chops it down into small pieces, and he packages it separately, and I buy it as a small piece, Lubovsky suggested even the Chavis Das would agree that I'm allowed to buy it like that. Or if I'll buy it as in an unusual shape, by the time I buy it, it's already made in that way, so Lubovsky thought even the Chavis Das would agree that in that case it would be permissible. But Lubovsky said he has seen packages of rolls that are sold with 8-10 rolls in a package that have a hashkafa with a D on it. And he said, that's terrible. He said, that he finds to be a very troubling practice and something that has to, his exact words were, this is truly disturbing and must be stopped. Right? It's a very troubling practice that people, were, they would sell large amounts of dough. He says, if they're selling, I think he quantified it by saying 4 rolls. If they were selling 4 rolls per package, so with a maximum of 4 rolls per package, he said, okay, that's a small enough quantity that by the time I buy it, it's in this small quantity of 4 rolls, so then it's mutter for me to buy it, even though it's a little bit bread, because I'm buying it in a small quantity. But more than that, he thought it was terrible, he thought it's usher to have a little bit bread sold in that way. Now, I mentioned before that these two machloksim are somehow conceptually linked. The machlokas, whether you're allowed to stick small amounts, trace amounts of milk into the bread to become batel, or you're not allowed to do that, whether in Valnus or Chachila Pazna, and the machlokas about reshaping or recutting the bread once it's already been baked. How are they conceptually linked? So Soloveitchik suggested that the machlokas really is how we view the issur, the gezeira, against milked bread. Is it an issur chefza, or is it an issur gavra? Meaning, when the Rabban formulated this gezeira, that you're not allowed to have milked bread, certainly the reason they formulated the gezeira we know very clearly. That is from Gemara. They made this gezeira because they were afraid if you have milked bread, you can eat it with flesh. But how did they formulate the gezeira? Did they formulate the gezeira as follows? That any bread that is made with milk in it is treif bread. Is that what they said? Or did they say no? Any bread made with milk in it, you're not allowed to eat. L'may nafkamina? Well, here's the difference. If they formulate it as an issur chefza, that it is treif bread, so that is a chefza of ma'achalos asuros. It becomes something that is usur. When I drop traces of milk into a dough, I'm being levatel issur. Right? Because it's actual isser. Milk bread would be actual isser. When I'm being mevatel small amounts of milk, I'm being mevatel isser. Another nafkamina would be, when I reshape it, it doesn't matter. I could cut up a ham any way I want to cut it up. I could cut up, a trace animal any way I want to cut it up. If it's trace, it's trace. Reshaping it doesn't help. It's already chetz of machalos asuros. Nothing I do later is going to change it. But if the way they formulated the issur is, no, this isn't machalos asuros, but you're not allowed to eat it. Because they were on the person, that the person shouldn't touch such bread. So then you could argue, yeah, when's the gezeira on the person? Once it's already milchik. But if I'm being the vatel trace amount of milk, it never becomes milchik. It never becomes machalos asuros. There's no problem of putting small amounts of milk, because I'm never going to eat I'm never going to violate that gezeira, because I'm never going to be eating anything milchik. Right? And then putting milk into dough is fine. That doesn't create machalos asuros. That's not a chefza of iser. That's just milchik bread. What do I do with milchik bread? I can't eat it. You can make it, you can have it. That's not called being mevatel iser. I'm just not allowed to eat milchik bread. But once I've been mevatel it, it's not milchik bread, it's batel. So it's mutter to eat. Or, and in terms of the other machlokas, you can say, again, if it's not a chetza of iser, so I could have baked a beautiful, like we said, the chasen kala challah, the beautiful big challah, and it's milchik, right? But it's not a chetza of iser. It's not a piece of iser. It's not an asr challah. It's a challah that I'm not allowed to eat. So I can still reshape it, recarve it, cut it up into small pieces, cut it into an unusual shape, and then it will become something that I am mutter to eat, that it's mutter for me to eat. So that's how Soloveitchik formulated this, as an issur chetza versus an issur gavra. And the truth is, this discussion, this chakina, whether it's an issur chetza or an issur gavra, is nogeh to another issue of milchik bread, and that is the issue of Shechta discussed once, of what if I make a challah kugel with milchik bread, or something like that. I use kalim and I cook, bake something hot with milchik bread. So does the milchik bread trafe up my kalim? Does it trafe up all my, I warm up rolls. say warm up for the people in restaurants, like serve warm rolls. I warm up rolls and I put it straight down on my plate. Does it chafe up my plate? A hot roll of milchit bread, does it make my plate? It was a milchit plate, right? But does it make my milchit plate chafe because milchit bread is asur? That would depend on this issue. If you view it as a chetz of machal sasudos, then yeah, chafes up the plate. However, if you don't view it as a chetz of machal sasudos, you view it as just a mitzvah gavra, so it's not going to chafe up the plate. It's perfectly kosher. It's just that I'm not allowed to eat it, right? But as a chetz, there's nothing wrong with it, so it's not going to chafe up the plate. So that's a third nafkamina in this same chakir. I'm sure Shefa was maple in this regard when it came to milk and bread with the kale. It is obviously very similar to the chakira that we were talking about before, to the chakira about the shalakum. There's a major machlokes in Yerushalayim we've discussed on more occasions than I can even count already, about whether when a guy cooks in your kelim, does the guy trafe up your kelim, or does he not trafe up your kelim? He's cooking purely kosher food, but it's bishalakum that he's cooking, and it's in your kelim. So do your kelim become trafe from the bishalakum, does it not become trafe? So what's the machlokes in Yerushalayim? Clearly, why is Bishal Akum Aser? It's also because we're afraid you're going to marry the guy's daughter, right? You're going to say, oh, what delicious food you make, and, I'd love to be part of your family, and you want to marry the guy's daughter, right? Mishum Chastos. That's why Bishal Akum is Aser. That there's no question about. Question that we show them is, how did they formulate the issue of Bishal Akum? Did they say anything cooked by a non-Jew becomes a chetzah of Machol Sasudos, in which case it would trace up the Kalim? Or do we say no? The way they formulated the gezeirah was that anything cooked by a non-Jew, while it may be kosher, there's a gezeirah that you're not allowed to eat it. Granted, it may be kosher, but as a gezeirah, you're not allowed to eat it. If that's the case, it wouldn't trafe up the kelim. As we mentioned, today, the Shulchan Aruch, whether it's mukher or asur by the Shulchan, Shulchan Aruch implies that it's asur, that it does trafe up the kelim. But we should, important to note, whatever the maskana is over there does not necessarily reflect on what the maskana is over here. I mean, just because the way they may have formulated the gzeira of Bishal Akum is as an isra chetza, that it becomes Malcholos Asuros, that may not be the same when it comes to milk and bread. They may have formulated the isra of milk and bread as an isra gavra. And that's in fact what Rav Shachar holds. That even though they formulated the isra of Malcholos Asuros as something that can trafe up the kelim because it's an isra chetza, when it comes to milk and bread, he thought it's only an isra gavra and cannot trafe up the kelim. But that's exactly, that's all totally in that same chakira. Now, in terms of the issue of Ein Mevat Menisah L'Chakira, so they put small amounts of, we had that machlokas, so if they put small amounts of milk into the dough, whether it's going to become batel or not. So I heard a number of times already from Rabbi Sabalowski that he's of the opinion, it seems, or he strongly implies this way, at least, that Ein Mevat Menisah L'Chakira is an issue for me, to take a little spoon of milk and put it into my big pot of chicken soup, or if it applied to our case, maybe if you hold like those poskim, to take a little bit of milk and put it into my dough. However, he holds, for me to give a hashkacha on a guy who does that is not a violation of Ein Mevat Menisah L'Chakira. I mean, if I visit a company and I'm a mashkiach and the company says, this is what we do. These are our ingredients. This is how it works out. And I look at the ingredients and I look at the way they make it and I realize they put some issue in there, but it becomes batel. So he's of the opinion that it's not a violation of Ein Mevat Menisah L'Chakira for me to put my hashkacha on it. My hashkacha is certifying that this food is kosher. It is kosher. I didn't put the issur in. They weren't asking me whether they can put the issur in. They were telling me, this is how we do it. Do you give the hashkacha or do you not give hashkacha? And my answer is a yes or a no. And if it's a no, it's a no. They're not changing their ingredients based on me in 99% of the cases. These companies aren't going to change the way they do things for the small segment of the population that they may be serving by having a reliable hashkacha on it. So he holds that's not a problem. They involve themselves in chachila. If I know they're putting a davar ha'asur in there and it's becoming batel, I'm allowed to give hashkacha. And certainly by bread, he said he would be perfectly comfortable with it. Now, that's a huge chiddush. I don't think there are kashrus agencies, reliable kashrus agencies, that hold like that. I think the large majority of kashrus agencies assume that if I'm putting my name on it, I'm certifying that nothing was done in the preparation of this food that I wouldn't do myself. And I think that's the way we generally assume. So even though, granted, I didn't put the Isser in, or put the trace amounts of Isser in, and be mevatel myself, but by me putting my hashkacha on this, my seal of approval on this, the way most poskim assume, and I'm certain is how the OU assumes, and the way most reliable hashkacha agencies assume, is that by me putting my name on it, my stamp on it, I am saying that every step in the process, in the production of this food, is something I would have been happy to do myself. And that's the level of quality that of kashrus that the seal is supposed to mean to people. So that's a big finish on the side. Now, practically speaking, when does this come up? So there are three cases two cases that I can think of that this comes up. First of all is the famous case of the English muffins. The case of the English muffins is, you know, if you may or may not be aware that the OU has for years and years, I don't know if it changed, but at least always was, Thomas's English muffins were sold with an OUD on it. English muffins are bread, and they're sold with an OUD. So what's the hazard? How could they be not there? Thomas's English muffins put an OUD. So I asked Rabbi Ganak, I asked Rabbi Shachter, and I got two different answers. Rabbi Ganak told me, they both work at the OU, I don't know how they, Rabbi Ganak told me that we learned before that what are the hectarians of making milk with bread if it's either in an unusual shape, or it's in small quantities. He said, you have both. English muffins are tiny, they're in real small quantities, and they're a very different shape than the normal pie of bread. Now, those are both very questionable clues. Because, yeah, each English muffin is a small quantity. When you sell them 12 in a package, it's not such a small quantity. And you leave them around your house for a long time, it's not considered such. The whole idea of small quantity is even by the time you remember that, by the time you have time to forget that it's milk, you will have eaten it already. It's gone in a day. It's not gone in a day, right? English muffins do not work that way. They're sold in big packages, and they're sold in more than Rebelski's limit of four per package. Rebelski also, supposed to get the OU, is sold in more than the limits of four per package. So that's a very questionable kula. What about the unusual shape? So in theory, that would be a great kula. Problem is, the Heimische companies got very upset. A lot of the Hashkach agencies were very upset about the OUV on the Thomas's English muffins. So a lot of the Heimische companies responded and made their own English muffins without any milk ingredients in it. So now you can go into the supermarket and you can find English muffins that are pirates. So the whole idea of the unusual tsura was that someone will know, you see this tsura, this shape, this form, you know that means milk. That's a red flag to me, milk. But if half of them now are pirates, so it's very hard to say that shape automatically means milk to you. So oddly, you know, the funkeit of everybody else may have taken away the kula of kentura of having the unusual shape. So Rochester thought neither of those kulas were a good enough kula to actually be matched with the English muffins. Rochester thought that the kula was something entirely different. He held that the reason we were making with the English muffins is that he said that his impression was that the amount of milk that they put in is very tiny amounts of milk. For sure, batel b'shishim. And he holds that those folks can say that you can be mevatel the milk b'shishim. And it's okay. And milk, even though you can't be mevatel milk and chicken soup b'shishim, he holds that those folks can hold that when it comes to a bread, to dough, you can be mevatel the milk and shishim. That was a shapless cooler when it came to the milk. That's practical application number one. The other practical application is what David raised before, and that's his path above the kitchen. We're looking at little cakes and things of that nature. So the Chacham Sadim writes very, very sharply that although in general, when it comes to halachos of path, akum, things like that, in general, when it comes to halachos of path above the kitchen is included in all halachos of path. However, and the same would be true over here, however, the Chacham Sadim writes, the gezeira against the milchik bread was only against those types of bread that you would eat with a meal, that you would eat, you could see yourself eating with a fleishig meal. But the type of bread that is not served at a meal, it's served after a meal, at the conclusion of a meal, such bread is going to be mutter. That's the shita of the Chacham Sadim. So therefore, that's basically matir all danishes and cakes. Danishes and cakes are not served together with the meat, they're served after the meat. And that's a critical distinction. Meaning, what were Chazal worried about when they asked for milk and bread? They were worried that you were going to take meat, put it between the two slices of bread, and have a sandwich. They were not worried that you were going to have one after the other. Why not? Because it's a much lesser issue to have one after the other than it is to have the two together. having the two together is mamish nisr. Having one after the other, we're going to see soon, is not nearly as great a nisr. It's not nearly as big of a problem. So that's not what Chazal were concerned about. And therefore, when it comes to cakes, things of that nature, you're allowed to have milk cakes, milk danishes, milk cookies. One final issue when it comes to milk bread, and then we'll move on to the second issue, is the issue of waiting to milk inflation, is there was a heter for a long time out there in kashrus agencies that, just like we said, if you make the bread in an unusual shape, it's mutter, because people would immediately recognize it as milk. There's no greater heker, unusual shape is one type of heker, but some argue there's no greater heker than putting a big dairy across the label. So it could be shaped like regular bread, but if on the label it reads O-U-D, so that's it. So you have your heker right there, and everyone will realize that it's milk. So that heker was used by some kashrus agencies for some time. The story goes that a famous Rosh Yeshiva's wife was making him lunch one day, and she took two slices of bread and put some salami in between the bread, served it to him, and he ate his lunch, and then she realized, it says O-U-D, I don't know O-U, but it says some reliable Ashkacha dairy on the package, and Rosh Yeshiva was nichshel in this in eating with this bread, and they decided if an Adam Gadol like that could stumble with milk and bread like that, so they're not going to rely on this heter anymore. So generally, that's not the heter that's relied on. They don't just put a dairy on the package and rely on the fact that you'll know that it says dairy on the package. They have to have something else. It has to be an unusual shape, small quantities. It has to be something else. And it's not something else. If you're in a store and you happen to see it looks like a regular loaf of bread and it's a sizable quantity and it has dairy on the package, it's worth looking into. It's worth a phone call. It's worth trying to find out what exactly the hazard is. Because every once in a while, this is something that, for whatever reason, people have stepped over the limits. So that's where Rozdelsky wrote that letter about these people. He felt people are going beyond the limits of what the halakha allows when it comes to this. It really has to be in small quantities, or in an unusual shape in order for it to be mutter, to have the milk and bread. Obviously, the package also has to be labeled with a dairy. You can't not label it with a dairy.
Certain packages are disposable, just like the dairy that comes in milk and bread. Certain packages are more durable, like the English muffins, where I don't know anyone that repackages the English muffins. They leave them in the box.
Yeah, but if you read the package every time you take an English muffin, meaning that the svara is that when they said, Chazal said it has to be made kentura, the heker is in the bread itself. And when you look at the bread, you see something that's unusual about it. Over here, you look at the bread, you don't see anything. Unless you hold that an English muffin is an unusual enough shape. But having something on the package is not enough, because very often when someone has served food, they go out, when they're at someone's house, they serve food, they don't see the package, they see the bread. Right? So, even if you see the package, you only very often don't even read the package. At the second issue I wanted to discuss, that we'll have to do a